approved, and we will move to time certain item 1094.
Accept streamlining agreement 10-year status report 2003 to 2013.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to invite Mike Reed, the chair of the streamlining committee, to come forward. We have a an all-star roster of presenters today to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the streamlining process. And in your packets, you have a the 10-year status report, as well as some other summary documents and a copy of the PowerPoint. This council item is to accept a report that marks 10 years of a unique agreement between the city and federal agencies to streamline the process for obtaining permits
for stream restoration projects. It was the first agreement of its kind, and in the 10 years since, it has helped, since its inception, it has helped to expedite dozens of projects. Many regulations and agencies come into play when in-stream work is involved, and this agreement has been invaluable to agencies that have to coordinate lots of regulatory programs to get their work done. So with that brief introduction, I'm very pleased this morning to introduce Mike Reed. Mike.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Before I start, I handed you the partnership award that the State Land Board awarded us last year. It was given by the governor, the secretary of state, and state treasurer, and it depicts a petroglyph in Washington State of She Who Watches, and we were very proud of that report and getting that award. As Commissioner Fish said, we're here to present the 10-year status report and ask for City Council to commit the streamlining team and the city to another 5 years. We were here back in 2009 asking the city to commit us to a five-year commitment back then. After my presentation, the Hatfield School of Government and the Center for Public Service will present their independent assessment of our streamlining team. And Rick Mogren and Phil Kiesling are here in the audience and will follow my presentation. And then after that, we have opportunities to hear some testimony, both from the members of the streamlining team as well as users. The streamlining agreement was put together with the purpose to build a collaborative process that encourages efficient, effective communications among the multiple agencies that permit city projects and the city project teams. And the goal is to secure timely and non-conflicting decisions from these agencies. Just a quick history of the city's streamlining agreement. In February 2003, we signed a memorandum of agreement between the city and the federal agencies to streamline federal ESA Section 7 consultations. At that time, the federal agencies were the Army Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It was recognized that we had other regulations, other agencies that needed to be involved in order to accomplish our goal of streamlining. And so those other agencies, by the way, began working with us immediately to accomplish those goals, but to formalize their role and partnership with us in February 2006, former Mayor Tom Potter and former Governor Ted Kulongowski formally invited the state agencies and the Bureau of Development Services to participate in the city's streamlining process. The state agencies were the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of State Lands, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I've already mentioned the presentation of the five-year status report in 2009, and you have the State Land Board Award that was presented last year. And in June of this year, the Hatfield School of Government finished their assessment of the streamlining process and, as I mentioned, are here to present that today. Just so that everyone can see who the formal partners are with our streamlining team, it's the Army Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that are with the federal agencies, state agencies, DSL, DEQ, ODFNW, and, as I mentioned, Bureau of Development Services.
By the way, that slide, I think, is very telling because it just illustrates how complicated it is to do stream restoration projects. There's an awful lot of federal, state, and local agencies that have to be coordinated and have different jurisdiction.
So that leads right perfectly to the next question. Why the need for a streamline agreement? So just an example of three agencies on our team. We could repeat this for all the other agencies. These are the processes that we have to go through just to get permits from these people, and this is what this process will look like in order to get a final decision. And it does complicate the process when you have this many, and you can see why people are frustrated with a process like this. The purpose is not to explain this at all today, it's just to show you the complicated process. And for streamlining, what does that mean? It's looking for a way to find common ground for collaboration. So again, just profiling these three agencies, we're able to go through these evaluation criteria, decision criteria, to reach a final decision. And I could also be showing the National Marine Fisheries Service or Department of Environmental Quality process as well, but we don't have time for that. Just some quick streamlining team facts. 187 City Bureau presentations have occurred over 10 years. It's important to note that in the past, we used to have individual bureaus with our consultants trying to contact these agencies, and they would be trying to contact each agency separately. So you could multiply by 3-4 times this number to get some idea of what it was like to work with these agencies and project teams. But the fact that we get all the agencies in one room and the project teams can hear one voice from all these agencies has really made an efficient process. The streamlining team agency members have issued 168 permits over these 10 years to 57 city projects. 42 agency representatives have served on the streamlining team since 2003. 7 agency representatives serve on the team at any one time. We have 7 bureaus that have most actively used the streamlining team process. This just lists the 4 that are probably at the top, with BES leading it at 109. Portland Parks, Water Bureau, and PBOT have less presentations and time in front of the streamlining team, but that doesn't lessen the reason that there are bridge replacements. The Water Bureau has a habitat conservation plan in the Bull Run. They need to be working with the streamlining team in order to facilitate these projects. Some quick examples of the streamlined permitted projects. Portland Fire and Rescue recently built the Fireboat Station 21, new boathouse and dock next to the Hawthorne Bridge in order to help facilitate response to emergencies to house their new response vessels. Parks recently restored shallow water habitat and built a boat ramp for the South Waterfront residents. The Water Bureau tunneled water pipelines below the Sandy River to reduce vulnerability. And TriMet and the Federal Transit Administration asked us if they could use the streamlined team in order to facilitate the permits for the new Tillicum Bridge crossing over the lower Willamette. If I was to ask how you can successfully acquire permits through the streamlining team, I would just sum it up with these 3 bullets. You coordinate early with the agencies. You get on the streamlining team agenda. You understand the agency's information requirements that will be reviewing your proposal. And the end result can be shorter approval timeframes and projects that will more likely stay within project budgets. As I mentioned, the Hatfield School of Government Center for Public Service did an independent assessment, an audit of our streamlining team process. And we have here in the audience Rick Mogren and Phil Kiesling, the director of Center for Public Service, that are ready to give their presentation.
I actually don't have anything to add to Mike. I was going to come introduce him, but I would like to thank our... My name is Jane Bicari. I'm Watershed Services Group Manager of BES. And I'd like to thank our partnering agencies in this process. As you can see, we have served the city well through a number of projects over the past 10 years. And we're hoping that we can have your support for another 5 years of our participation in the process.
And we have some guests we're going to invite up, but I just want to ask you one question before we transition.
Sure.
Streamlining with this many different levels of government still presents the challenge of how do you get to consensus when everybody has their own authority when they come to the table. Mm-hmm. Now, I can tell you that in my experience, when we have a disaster in our community and we invoke the Disaster Policy Council, the chair of that council is the ultimate decider. And so we have a system set up so that everybody gets their say, but a decision has to be made and the chair makes a decision. So what's the key to getting to yes, where you have so many people at the table that have independent authority?
Well, Mike Reed is the chair for the streamlining team, so I'll defer to him to give you some insight.
It is true that each agency was representing their own set of laws that had their own strict legal requirements for how they will get to yes or no. Over the years, we have sat at the table and figured out what evaluation criteria, decision criteria do we all share that we can focus on. We have also taught permits workshops every year that all the agencies get to hear each other and begin to learn what each agency needs. But that question that you asked, has been addressed by the Hatfield School of Government. And I was very pleasantly surprised to hear some of their findings. So if you're willing to...
Should we invite Professor Mogren and Director Kiesling up to give a presentation? Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. My name is Phil Kiesling. I'm the director of the Center for Public Service, which is part of the Marco Hatfield School of Government at Portland State University. The mission of the center is to connect the resources of the university, faculty, graduate students, and others with real-world needs and challenges in the public sector. We do a lot of work for many local, state, federal agencies and tribal governments as well, and nonprofits. Currently working on a project with the City of Portland, for example, around innovation and how to encourage that within the city. This was a project very much up our alley, and we were very glad to have the chance to look at it. It is an independent assessment, as we told Mike. Well, we might look at this closely and find that it's terrible. We actually didn't, and Rick will tell you what he did find. But we were delighted to have the chance to do it. Dr. Mogren is himself epitomizes what we often call the pracademic impulse in our center, the melding of practitioners and practice with academic knowledge. He's a colonel, retired now from the Army Corps of Engineers, so he's been at the other side of the table around these permits, so knows that. And then he went back and got his PhD just a couple years ago and now teaches courses. So I just great pleasure to turn it over to Rick Mogren to talk about our findings.
Thank you, Phil. And commissioners, thank you very much for the opportunity to present the findings of our assessment. Before I get started, I want to acknowledge the contribution of Ben Fitch, the graduate student who assisted with this process. He could not be here today, unfortunately, but he played a major role in collecting the data, organizing the data, and helping pull the report together. So I didn't want to go take the time where he not let him be recognized for his contribution. What I want to do is give you a quick overview of the project and methods, spend most of the time that we have allotted on our findings, conclusions, and recommendations. What I'm going to do is illustrate these with individual specifics without going into a lot of detail, and those of you that have questions and would like to get into more detail, we can do that after we're done with the formal presentation. In terms of the what we were asked to do was, as Phil and Mike have said, it was a 360-degree third-party assessment of the streamlining process, and then, if warranted, to provide endorsement. And I'm happy to say that the center is pleased and proud to endorse this process and recommend it be continued for another 5 years. Getting to the bottom line on our conclusions, they're shown here. It's an excellent process for the city. It brings together these different regulatory folks who work together to come to decisions. And Commissioner Fisher, I will get to your question you asked as to how I see that playing out and why that works as well as it does in a couple of minutes. There were some limitations to our study, mainly driven by the scope of what we were asked to do. I'm not going to dwell on this. Again, if there's questions, we can get into this later. I will say, though, that whereas we did not bore deeply into the material made available to us by Mike and by BES, we found no contradictions in any of the findings or conclusions he's reached in his 10-year report with our interview results. Our primary source of information were the interviews that we conducted. In terms of our scope, as I mentioned, we conducted a number of interviews with a number of folks involved in this process, both within the team, with project managers, with consultants, and with the leadership from BES. We had a structured interview process with specific questions geared to get to specific topics, and we had a couple open-ended questions just to give individuals an opportunity to share what they felt was important for us to know. And frankly, a good half of our findings came from those open-ended questions, things we had not anticipated going in, but were very valuable in making our final assessments. In terms of our findings, we organized them under these four categories. And again, this was kind of a bottoms-up inductive kind of thing. We just looked at all the findings and categorized them the way they were. We didn't form-fit them to these topics. I'm going to go through each of these major categories, and as I mentioned before, I will illustrate them with an example or two from each without going into a whole lot of detail, but give you a flavor of the types of things we found. Under purpose, goals, and functions, what I want to do is spend a little time on these particular two. In terms of project quality, a number of things we found here is, number one, you're getting the environmental compliance that the system is designed to bring up to the satisfaction of the regulatory agencies that are sitting around the table. There's a clear sense on the part of all the participants that this reduces the processing time. You avoid the wrong rock problem of talking to one agency who says, yeah, do this, and then you go to another agency and they say do that, and it's a different system. So there's time saved in the process itself. Quality is improved by discussing project alternatives. So if the initial project request comes in at the meetings that Mike holds, and it doesn't seem quite right, there's a discussion that takes place about what alternatives may be put in place to make it more compliant. And the other piece on project quality is the fact that because you've got these representatives from these different regulatory agencies who are responsible for different laws and different authorities, they can have those conversations and integrate the needs to meet the needs of all the species that are affected by whatever project is being discussed. I want to then talk to a bit about the relationships that go into this, because this, Commissioner, gets to the heart of your question. That the team that's formed here and the way they see themselves is a very cooperative, collaborative type team. And as they get involved in this process, they adopt a appreciation for each other's responsibilities. And so they think in terms of not just with the authorities and requirements they're there to carry out, but also what the individual next to them needs. And so they think in turn more holistically about how they approach this regulatory process. An unexpected benefit of this is this carries to regulatory decisions outside of the city process. And so if the Corps of Engineers rep is listening to a 404 permit request from somewhere, knows that the Department of State Lands is going to ask this person this question on this topic, he will so inform the applicant that you need to talk to so-and-so from state lands and get their input. So there's a spillover effect of this that goes beyond the benefits to the city. In terms of metrics, we were asking, one of our structured questions was, how do you think we ought to measure the results of this? And one would expect the usual quantitative type things like time, money, and that sort of thing, and we certainly heard that. What I hadn't expected was to get some of these ideas of qualitative ways of measuring success. And I want to speak to one of those on the transparency and accountability, is that the fact that all the folks are sitting around the table with the project manager discussing this, and the fact that everybody is hearing the same information and hearing the same requirements going to the project manager, it kind of opens up that process so everybody knows what the rules are and everybody knows what the expectations are. Additionally, there's an accountability aspect of this, because everybody is kind of, again, hearing what everybody else is saying. Now, the way the process works is, after this meeting, the applicants go and speak to the individual agencies and go into more detail on their projects and develop the projects more on there. But generally speaking, the baseline is laid here so that there's a common starting point for the projects. One of the questions that's left, though, is how do you actually measure this stuff as a metric? And that we didn't get into that here. We just kind of put that on a parking lot as something else that may want to look at further on down the road. In terms of process strengths, there are five thematic conclusions are listed here. In the interest of time, I'm only going to focus on one of these, and that is the finding regarding consistency and efficiencies. What we observed in this process and what we have learned from our interviews is that by getting this consistent, integrated regulatory advice, you tend to get more consistent compliance. And part of this is not only that the regulators are making clear what their expectations are, but as the project managers get used to this, they tend to bring their projects in designed to meet those questions they know they're going to get. And that, in turn, obviously makes it more acceptable environmentally and it allows the permit process to move more quickly. In terms of weaknesses, we set out as part of this that, you know, every process has got to have weaknesses, and we wanted to find what those were and bring those out. The fact is, we could not find any of our interview results who any major weaknesses whatsoever. In fact, one of the comments that stuck out was, I can't see the city operating without it. Mm-hmm. Number of process improvements, the one that I would, I'm not going to bore, go into detail here on these process improvements other than this outreach idea, where the members of this team are concerned about educating their senior leadership about the benefits of this and making sure they understand for their programs how important this is within the city itself. In terms of some of these themes here and our general conclusions, this diagram's intended to illustrate this relationship piece. Inside the process, you've got these team members who developed this sense of teamwork and cooperation, this integrated approach to their regulatory requirements, with relationships that go outside the box with the various participants. Everything we heard from all our 360-degree review said that this was a very constructive, positive type relationship. I noticed some of the project managers are here in the room today. So we have that normative and instrumental. What I mean by that are these behavioral changes I've spoke to and the instrumental objective benefits where this process meets the purposes for which it was designed to carry out. Mike mentioned briefly this training that takes place every year. Again, high marks from all our interview participants here in terms of how this not only teaches the project managers of the regulatory expectations, but give the project managers an opportunity to share with regulators some of the practicalities of construction and some of the challenges they face in meeting their obligations. And finally, in information management, I mean that not in the sense of information technology, but just in the sharing of the information that's essential to making a successful project completed. In terms of recommendations, the major one is to continue the process as currently designed. Again, we got a number of procedural recommendations. I'm not going to go into those here other than to acknowledge that they exist. And Mike has these, the team has these, and they're taking them under consideration. And finally is to follow up on some of these parking lot type issues, such as what's an appropriate measurement methodology for qualitative metrics. There's a question of whether this ought to be mandatory for all the bureaus or not. And frankly, there was some pushback on that idea, some concerns that might not be the best idea. So that merits a little further investigation. And probably most interesting to us was the idea of exporting this to other jurisdictions around the state. So, commissioners, thank you very much again. I'd be happy to take your questions. And I just want to sum up by saying we're very pleased to endorse this project and recommend that it be processed and recommend it be continued.
Dr. Moger and I have just two quick questions. Sure. The first is for anyone who is thinking of contracting with PSU to do a similar 360 of other programs, but how long did it take you from the time you were contracted to the time you were able to conclude your assessment?
That's probably the one question I didn't come prepared to answer. I would have to think about that a bit. Mike, do you remember when we...
6 months.
6 months, okay.
About 6 months to do something of this magnitude.
Right.
And I guess the second question is, you were given an assignment to look at this particular streamlining program, which uniquely engages governments outside of Portland, so it's Portland and sister governments. But it struck me as you were giving us your excellent presentation that there were some lessons for us how we might operate better within Portland government. Any thoughts?
With regard to environmental compliance?
This program is designed to streamline relationships across government. But occasionally we hear concerns from people about within city government having bureaus work more effectively together and streamlining the process. Any thoughts about the lessons learned from this that could apply to other areas?
Not just from this, but a bunch of other work I'm doing. Mayor Hales is not here, for example, is leading this Multnomah County Drainage District issue with the levees up in North Portland, and we're engaged with that particular process where you're doing the same type of thing. You're bringing in a number of different governments and bureaus from the city, county, state, federal type agency folks to try to solve a very serious problem that's facing the city. So this notion of collaborative governance, of different levels of government, collaborations between bureaus within a government or agencies within a government or between the different levels of government seems to be the wave of the future. And so how you go about doing that then is having somebody like Mike who can take the lead of a survey as a convening lead to bring this about. And I have a number of thoughts about how to make that work, but frankly, we don't have time for it. But there's quite a bit of thinking we've done on that about how you make these networks work, given the different identities, the cultures, the interests, the objectives, the belief systems that different organizations will bring to this.
So. And I think we would welcome that follow-up conversation because PSU is also in the lead around regional solutions, Oregon solutions, all these programs that are designed to facilitate collaborative decision-making in government. And every time that I have the honor of participating in one, I learn some lessons about how that are transferable to my day job. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'll just add, in fact, one of the projects that Rick mentioned is actually an internal collaboration within the Hatfield School between the center, which Rick is from, and the National Policy Consensus Center, Greg Wolf and Steve Greenwood and others lead. So very much a model that we continue to explore and find very fruitful with dealing with these complex and increasingly wicked problems.
And I don't mean to put off your question, Commissioner, but it's just not a soundbite kind of answer.
So. I appreciate it.
Any questions?
Actually, I very much appreciate the presentation. It's very impressive. I do have a question, however, for Mr. Kiesling, which is you presented us with what is to me a new word, pracademic, to refer to the marriage of academic theory and practice. It seems to me that that concept has traditionally been reflected in the ancient word praxis. And I'm curious as to why you've come up with a new word, and why is the word used by philosophers from Karl Marx to Hannah Arendt not good enough for you?
Well, I have a lecture actually prepared on that very thing right here.
If he can't, I can.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you both. So we have one more invited panel, Dan, which we'll invite up. Thank you if you could be available for further questions, and it's now my honor to invite three guests from the Department of State Lands, Kirk Jarvie, the Director's Office Senior Policy Analyst, from the Water Bureau, Tim Collins, Senior Engineer and Program Manager, and from TriMet, Dave Unsworth, Director of Project Development and Permitting. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Who'd like to kick it off?
Looks like I've been voted in. Kirk Jarvie, Department of State Lands, Commissioner Fish, members of the City Council. On behalf of Mary Abrams, the Director of the Department of State Lands, it's my pleasure to be here this morning to, sing the praises of the Regulatory Streamlining Program. I think through the testimony that you're going to hear from these gentlemen and in the report that's in front of you, there's a very compelling story that's being told about how this program has benefited city projects and how projects have moved forward more quickly than what would otherwise have been possible without this program. I'm going to turn that conversation on its ear for just a moment, if you don't mind, and talk about it from the perspective of the regulatory agencies and ask the question, what's in it for us? Clearly benefit for you, but for the regulatory agencies, why are we at the table for this? And I want to answer that with five brief statements, I guess. First is efficient use of regulatory agencies' time. Much like city staff, state and federal agency staff are being pressed to cover more and more bases with less time and less resources. By convening this sort of forum, we're able to get our message out more efficiently and cover more bases, more projects within the city. Secondly, the agencies are able to instill their respective needs into projects early in the process when those projects are still malleable. I think as these gentlemen will attest to, there's nothing worse than a regulatory agency coming in at the 11th hour wanting all kinds of design changes on a project. Chaos ensues, I think, is the answer to that. Thirdly, it creates the opportunity for agencies to coordinate their regulatory agencies to coordinate our regulatory interests to avoid duplication and to avoid conflicting directives. I think that's what the gentleman from the Hatfield School was alluding to during his presentation, that making sure that as we're all talking about these projects around the table, we're aligning our permit conditions requirements in a way that we're not overlapping, or even worse, sending city staff in different directions in terms of what they need to do to comply with the various laws. Fourth is to create an opportunity for regulatory agencies to understand and accommodate other constraints that these gentlemen have with their projects. When we sit in our offices and process permit applications, we don't have the benefit of knowing and understanding what other obligations these gentlemen have to meet in order to deliver their projects. By being around the table with them, we can better understand what are all the sideboards they're dealing with and how can we adapt our sideboards to meet the broader objective. And finally, the program creates a shared responsibility for project delivery. I think that's so important because it really breaks down that old paradigm of us, the regulator, versus them, the project manager, and really moves us to a place where it really forces us to communicate about what each other needs are and to get to a place where we can accommodate both our needs. So with that, on behalf of the Department of State Lands, we look forward to another good 5 years, if not 10 years or more, in serving the regulatory streamlining program. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Dave Unsworth, TriMet. I'm the Director of Project Development, and I had the responsibility of getting all the permits for the Port Milwaukee Light Rail Project. It's 7.3 miles. We cross about 8 streams or rivers, the largest one being the Willamette River, where the Tillicum Crossing goes. Hopefully you saw the lights up there last week. So for that one point, for the Tillicum Crossing alone, there were 34 local, state, federal, and property owner requirements. That's a lot of herding of cats. And I would tell you that early on, what we're trying to do is control the risk, schedule risk, scope risk, and understand what these agencies want. This streamlining opportunity gave us a venue to come and have discussions over a two-year period, way in advance of when we're getting our permits, when we're doing our National Environmental Policy Act, Protection Act, Policy Act, our NEPA document, and our biological assessment. We were able to understand the scope, talk to the city, talk to the different federal and state local agencies to make sure we had a solid scope that we could move forward with, that we would be assured that we'd be able to get our permits. So that certainty. What we found is when we talked to individual agencies, that was fine, but what they really wanted to do was hear what the other agencies wanted to talk about, what was important to them. They all come from it with similar regulatory requirements. Each one has a slightly different look. But in the end, what you want to do is make sure that you have the scope, the understanding, and in the end, the appropriate mitigation that addresses both local, state, and federal projects. So in part of this conversation, working with all your staffs, we were able to come up with, I think, great mitigation. So shallow water habitat with the Central District Greenway, 25,000 square feet. We're actually working with and teaming with the Willamette River Keepers, repairing riparian habitat on Ross Island. At Crystal Springs, we were actually able to leverage the Union Pacific and replace a culvert that blocked fish passage for a number of years. In addition, we teamed with the Corps of Engineers and Parks in redoing the Portland, the Westmoreland Park pond that opens up this week. At Johnson Creek, we were able to look at doing and teaming with Friends of Johnson Creek and actually breaking out that, making and enhancing the floodplain in that area. So the concentration and the looking at this allowed us to team with your city bureaus to come up with what I think is a much better project that got through permitting very easily, but it was a better result in the very end. So I think the one word I would use is priceless. The communication that this process allowed us to have ended up with a faster, best, better project and more certainty for the project. And without that 10th or 11th hour, oh my gosh, there's a break or a bust. We didn't think about that. And that's going to hold you up. When we looked at our risk, so if we didn't hit our in-water work window, which is defined by July 1st to October 31st in the Willamette River, if we missed that, it was a $60 million impact to a project. That is unsustainable. And that's why this coordination and the streamlining committee helps us get through all of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Tim Collins. I'm a senior engineer with the Water Bureau. My area of expertise or focus is projects that happen in the Bull Run with the watershed, the dams.
Bring the mic a little closer. Yeah, you can slide better? The whole thing if you want.
Much closer. So I have been involved in quite a few projects dealing with how the Water Bureau does work around the protected watershed features, the Bull Run River, the Sandy River. Some tributaries related to other streams coming into the Sandy River. So when Mike asked me would I come and talk to this about my experience with this, I was like, awesome, great. Because I wrote an email that was like a page long in 5 minutes. I just, lots and lots of things just came out about how this process has really helped me. I've been involved in projects since 2007 with this, and so I've seen it kind of evolve. It was always useful, even from the beginning. It's become even more so in the present day. as been mentioned before, probably one of the most powerful elements of it is the early nature that you get to talk to the regulators. You get to come, you get to bring your project. As you mentioned, the projects are still mailable. This is huge. This is a major benefit to not have this sort of after-the-fact input that's really difficult and expensive to input into these projects. The other thing that's particularly useful is you get to talk to all of the regulators at the same time. You can create a concise and consistent message that you give to all the regulators. That's powerful because then you're not giving slightly different stories to them as you move through time. Also, I've seen what I call a synergy of getting these people who, you know, their passion is protecting the environment, protecting the species, and you get this synergy of ideas, of ways to solve the problem. You can just feel it as you're in the room. You're just like, okay, we could do this or we could do that. You know, there's lots of that collaboration that goes on that's very useful and effective that I find to be extremely valuable to projects like this. The other thing is you build a level of credibility with your regulator partners because they see you, they know what your ideas are about over the time. You know, I've been involved for 5 or 6 years now. They know me. They have some credibility. I've been able to make projects move through the system, and they've been effective at protecting things, so they find that to be useful, and that building that credibility is important. I've also, people move through the process a bit, you know, people move on, and what I've also found is very powerful is that the new people are kind of brought up to speed. They're brought up to speed by their peers. There's already that base level of credibility that exists within the committee, so that's very useful to kind of bring people up. It's like, it's okay, we talked about this already, it's okay. So I guess that's what I would like to say is I hope this continues. It sounds like it will. It's been a very valuable resource for me in getting my work done on time and effectively, and I would highly recommend it to continue. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for the panel? Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Are there any other invited
No. I think we have some guests in the audience who've been working on it. We could ask them to stand just so that we can acknowledge them, folks that are here that are part of this process. You could just stand. We could thank you for your good work.
Thank you very much.
And that concludes the formal presentation, Mr. President.
Okay, is there anybody that wishes to, anybody signed up to testify, or anybody that wishes to testify on this report?
No one signed up for this item on the sign-up sheet.
Okay. Great. Make a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. Carla, please call the roll.
Novick?
Very interesting and actually exciting report on what sounds like an excellent process. Aye.
Fritz.
This is another of the legacies of Mayor Tom Potter, and it's really good to see 10 years later how it's working so well. People think that agencies don't talk to each other, and in fact we do, and we want to be able to do that, so this has set up the structure for that. I'm very happy that the Bureau of Development Services is one of the participants, and it's certainly a lot easier for our regulators here in the city when everybody's talking to each other at the same time. Congratulations, Commissioner Fish. Thank you for bringing this report so that the public understands that there's all these amazing people doing diligent work on issues that most people didn't even know needed to be regulated. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to thank everybody who joined us this morning. When Director Kiesling was testifying, we had a little conversation about the values of collaborative decision-making. And some of the best experiences I've had on this council have been on either Oregon Solutions or Regional Solutions teams, which is representatives across government coming together to look at a complex problem and to try to work towards solutions. And the challenges we face as a community are getting only more complicated because of the myriad of regulations at every level of government. And so having that sort of permanent, ongoing process to facilitate good communication, transparency, problem solving, I think, is even more important today. So it's my pleasure to present this report to my colleagues, but it's also my honor to thank Mike Reed for his leadership. As I was being prepared for this hearing the constant refrain I got was that you are the terrific leader of this process, and I want to thank you publicly for your work. I want to thank all the bureaus that are engaged, including my team at BES, people rolling up their sleeves and making making this work. I want to thank all of our invited guests, and particularly our friends from PSU. We have relationships with PSU that go well beyond just doing 360s. We have Hatfield Fellows that work in this building. We have regular exchanges with experts on criminal justice to public policy of one kind or another. So we're very fortunate to have Portland State University in our city, and we're very fortunate to have this kind of ongoing relationship with the faculty and graduate students. And finally, I want to thank our other invited guests, the partners. You know, when Dave said there were 38 different jurisdictions that or bodies that he had to deal with in the permitting just for the Portland-Milwaukee light rail, I mean, that's daunting. And we have to have a process to work through those issues in a thoughtful and rational, timely way. And I am proud of the work that you do on this, grateful for Mayor Potter's launching of this 10 years ago and all those who brought it to this point, and I enthusiastically endorse continuing in this road for the next 5 years. So big thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thanks to the streamlining team for doing such a great job. It's truly a multi-jurisdictional effort that is sounds like it's paying off according to the Center for Public Service and Hatfield School of Government, so we appreciate that that external validation as well. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, and please to vote aye. So the report is accepted, and we will move on now.